This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Hufflings! It's me, Jess William Cartwright. And I am joined today by...
We all know Nati Lewis now, but everybody calls me Onati. I've been dubbing in accents today, so that's why that's happening.
And who are you?
I've snuck in. I tied up the previous person who was sitting here. They're gagged in the corner, semi-conscious. I'm the new black halfling. Funny enough, sounding exactly the same and looking exactly the same. And with the same name, Jeremy Cobb. But Taylor Lewis calls me George Costanza.
What's behind that? I like it. It's very like film noir.
What's behind it is that Seinfeld never went to the UK, because if it had, everyone would know exactly what I just referenced.
Oh my god!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full Prince vibe? Woof.
Ah, let's make them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now. I never really did Seinfeld. I'll cop to that.
Look, I will say this. Friends... For whatever reason, NBC pushed Friends hardcore in the UK. Mm. I do not mm-hmm. know why, but it is a massively popular show in the UK.
It
Seinfeld,
is. It is.
Which is, I would argue, not only a superior show, but also much closer to what your typical British sitcom sensibilities
yeah.
On pretty much every level, was not pushed to nearly the same degree, if at all. It's if you'd seen Seinfeld, you'd know what I mean. It's
good.
One of the
it's
all-time
fun.
Greatest shows, incredibly groundbreaking on multiple levels.
Oh my god, Jeremy.
Yes.
Speaking of incredibly groundbreaking, Three Black Halflings, we have an announcement to make.
You're right. You're right. We have some announcements to make for our in regards to our show, The Cub and the Caterpillar, A Wagadu Tale. You may have noticed at the tail end of episode 18, yes, 18, the announcement that referred to this being the conclusion of season 1 of The Cub and the Caterpillar.
What do you mean, season 1, Jeremy?
What do you mean? Tell us more.
Just like the weather, our show is now going through seasons.
Cool. Wow. I mean, it's good, but whoa.
Here's a better one. Just like Seinfeld, The Cub and the Caterpillar is now being split up into seasons. Just like Seinfeld, it's not going to hit its stride until season 3, at which point, from about seasons 3 through 7, it will be one of the greatest shows ever produced.
That is genuinely the aim, though. If by season 3 of The Cub and the Caterpillar, we were one of the greatest DTRP shows,
you'll be able to fully enjoy it. You'd be like, wow, I have never this. The pieces were all there, but my goodness, it really came together.
I feel like that's generally the aim with this show. At some point,
it'll come
all
together.
The pieces will come together.
Yes.
And my God, this is going to be a good podcast.
just wait until the contest episode of Three Black Halflings. If you know what I'm referring to, you know. That is a good joke,
man.
If you know what I'm referring to. But those of you who've been following the show since the beginning know that it's gone through a couple of different iterations. It began as sort of like a live streamed experience that was happening once a month. Then we accelerated that to twice a month. It was Look, we didn't know at the time how difficult live streaming was, but we, I think everyone can attest to the fact that when we decided to no longer do it, the world breathed a sigh of relief.
The quality of the show, and I think actually more so even just in the technical stressful elements, I feel like the quality of the show got a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, once we went back, you know, and I think everyone at home will hopefully agree as well.
Because you could just like relax and play and not be like, no one can hear us.
Genuinely, the first, I can't remember what I did the first few episodes.
I remember exactly what Jesper did, because I watched Jesper he's already got big eyes, but my God, like, he was wide eyed, like, stressed, like, sweating.
No thoughts for my character or what I was playing. I was just so unbelievably stressed that I was looking at the chat who was saying, "We can't hear you. You sound like a robot. You."
wild times.
I think the quality of the show got better, which is nice.
And then after that, we were like, all right, cool. Well, we were like, we feel like we have not, because we are in fact the official Wagadu podcast, actual play show, that is. We did not, or we wanted, more accurately, to be able to incorporate more things from the upcoming developments in the Wagadu setting, be able to collaborate more closely with Alan and Twin Drums in terms of creating new things or incorporating new ideas that they're having or new ideas that we're having that we can work on with them ahead of time, all that good stuff, to make just a deeper and more fun experience for you, just a better show, I think, for everyone involved.
And hopefully more of a produced show as well.
Yes, and also hopefully to be able to have guest stars on for longer as well. We always felt bad when we could only have people on for a single episode, and it's like, all right, bye. We really liked your character.
We're just going to crowbar you out of this narrative right now.
And a portal opens and you disappear, or you walked up into the night.
That's literally it.
Literally, I think... two out of the three appearances that we've had
have walked off
into the distance. It's just like out into the middle distance.
Have just been gone. Okay, well, you're gone now.
And then left us in a subsequent like shitstorm of stuff we had to deal with after they left.
It's true.
I don't know where he is.
I don't know. He just had to go. Contract disputes. Not contract disputes. Scheduling difficulties. So we're hoping that by being able to record episodes in advance, more in advance, and a more shortened season format, we'll be able to make a better show, a more structured show, and have people on for longer narrative arcs. Just everything. Everything better.
And also, we'll be switching to a weekly release schedule as well. So for you guys, you will actually be able to absorb the narrative in a more regular basis, as opposed to sort of having this long 2-week break.
Exactly. You win. We win. Everybody wins.
You won't be listening to the show and being like, oh, right. Yeah, they went through a wasteland like 4 months ago. Or like,
that was so wild when we sat down and worked out like how long it has taken us to do certain things. Just out of the sheer time frame that we've been recording this first season.
King Nyati, after his initial appearance, did not, because he initially appeared at the very end of session 3 and then was all through, I guess, episode 4. And then we did not see him again until episode 19.
I mean, come on.
And not only that, like, that's not that bad. It was, I think we saw him for the first time in October, maybe.
It is now the year of our Lord 2021. June.
Wow.
And then the next time we saw him, was in July. July is the next time that we saw him.
Sorry, I remember. I'm not thinking in the future. I'm present in Nadi right now.
I have not re-listened to the whole season, but I'm guessing that if you binge, it flows better than if you were listening live. And you're like,
we haven't seen that dude
in over half a year.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
So anyway,
I was seething with hatred.
To avoid having big bads who don't show up for entire 7+ month periods. as well as all the other reasons I mentioned. We're going to a weekly release schedule and separating everything into seasons.
Yes.
And here's the other thing, folks. This is important to remember because we've talked about this. So for a lot of actual play shows, some long-running ones, especially long-running ones, it can be difficult if you're just starting out to know where to jump in. Say a show's gone on for over 100 episodes and you're like, that's a mountain of episodes. And then you look at the length
that's
and you're like,
minimum of 200 hours, probably closer to 300 to 400 hours of catch up.
I ain't got enough time in the day.
It could take you years to just to catch up with where the show was when you started listening to it.
This is not a One Piece situation. So, we're not doing a One Piece here.
Or JoJo's. Actually, no, it's actually closer to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure because every season, while they are connected, are not going to be direct continuations of exactly stuff that has happened. They're going to be their own contained stories. So while there will be references to things that have happened in the previous season and some of the events may carry on, if you start with season two of The Cub and the Caterpillar, you will not be completely lost. We will be reintroducing characters, reintroducing all of this stuff each season that we do for a new audience so that people don't, if they want to, they can absolutely go back and listen to old episodes, but they can start with the current season and still have a great time. And on top of all of that, in between seasons of The Cub and the Caterpillar, we will also be debuting a new actual play show in a new actual play setting with new players and new guests. Two of the same players, but an additional player and new guests.
And new guests.
I mean, we're here.
We are cooking up a storm for this for this next little mini adventure that we're doing in between seasons one and two. And
we have all boarded the hype train.
Oh, I can't tell you. I am so excited to announce this stuff. We're still cooking. It's still in the oven, so we can't reveal what it is yet.
We did run a sort of a session zero one shot yesterday. It was absolutely ridiculous.
And I think to quote a film, I can't remember what film it is, but we're going to lose some paint in here. That's all I'm going to say. We're going to lose some paint in here.
It's going to be an adventure, folks.
Certainly is.
Frankly, I can't wait to see what we have in store, but I can't wait for you to see what we... I'm the one writing the thing, and I don't know what's in store, all of it yet, but we're still developing it, and it's going to be a real adventure, that's going to be premiering this fall, late summer into the fall.
At the moment, it is, we're slated for sort of late August.
And don't worry, by the way, we have... To sate you in between seasons, we have a whole gamut of other little one shots and fun things that we will be premiering every other Thursday in between the ending of season one of The Cub and the Caterpillar and the season of our new actual play show that will be premiering. Some amazing guests again. I think all of whom you've heard before, but in new ways. In new ways.
Very new ways.
Maybe we won't... some of it might not even be D&D. It might not even be D&D.
Probably from me if I find enough hours in the day.
Yes. And also from me. We got some fun stuff, folks. The point is, this was the longest introduction ever.
That was a good solid 10 minute thing.
10 minutes.
Jeremy said to me before this episode, he said, "Hey, let me do this thing. I've got an idea of what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Let me introduce it."
This is, frankly, I'm of the opinion that mostly what people tune in for is this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Chaos.
Other than the deep dives, people be here for those deep dives.
Yeah.
That's true. People do like the deep dives. But I imagine it's similar to like Dimension 20. You watch it initially for like the joke appeal. And then all of the other stuff, it's pitched as a comedy podcast. But I think what draws you in is actually like the emotionality and the creativity on display and the great performances of the players. And then the comedy just becomes a really cool thing on top of that. I feel like we pitch ourselves as like a D&D podcast and pop culture podcast. But what really is the meat of the show?
We are just a myth.
Just people just hanging out, talking about whatever. And then the rest of it's like, I really like that stuff too. But
that's cool.
That's how I feel.
That's
this
fun.
Show.
That's fine.
Yeah.
People don't come here for competence, is my point.
Yes, no, oh, thank God.
Thank goodness.
Because, damn, we'd be having one download on the pilot. If that was the case,
it wouldn't have been any of us.
That's what I mean. They'd have tuned in and gone, oh, hell no, this is bad. This is not good. This is not good. But yeah, so that is that. And actually, then, so what we're going to do today is we thought we'd actually talk a little bit about Wigado. It seemed like a good time. You're going to be listening to this in between episodes 19 and the kind of finale episode 20. So we thought it'd be a good time for us to just have a chat about Wigado. We get quite a lot of questions on the Discord, and we get a lot of people. I know a lot of people like comment on the Twitter, on like Wigado's Twitter and stuff like that as well, and talk about like, oh, like, how does this work in Wigado, or what's the rules with this? And I guess we never even really talked about like the lineages and like different abilities and stuff that they have. So we thought we would just do like a little deep dive on Wigado. That's like that's what we're doing.
That's the vibe.
That's the vibe. That's the vibe for today.
I have a suggested format if you don't have one, Jasper.
I will let you suggest or pitch a structure for this, but you will take one D6. I have a D6 here for every Seinfeld reference for the rest of the episode.
Okay, well, the good news is you haven't seen the show, so you won't catch any of them.
Oh, no. Jeremy, if you reference Seinfeld out of nowhere in regards to the Africa-based Wigado campaign, I feel like I'm going to tell the difference between, like, a dude's name from Seinfeld and someone from Wigado.
There are internal references that you might not.
I'm going to keep a running tally of every... Yeah, I'm going to keep a running tally of every single time.
Seinfeld is a very smart show.
Okay, yeah.
If you get above 30 hit points of damage, then you're
then
out.
I'm just off the episode.
I mute your mic for the rest of the episode.
The suggested format is this. We start with the two of you, and then I will jump in third. What was the first thing that jumped out at you in terms of being very distinct about Wigado in comparison to normal D&D?
A whole lot of black people.
I don't know
what else you have to say. Like a whole lot of black. Go ahead, Jess.
No, I was going to say, I think...
That's it, I love it.
No, that is the answer. That is your answer. You can't pick a different answer now. I think, for me, genuinely, I think magic was the big one, because it suddenly felt so... like spiritual. It suddenly felt so much more like power drawn than power given, if that makes sense, if that's the right like phrase to use. It felt like we were a part of a magical world. It felt like we were a part of this kind of collective kind of pool of which we were all drawing kind of power from and essence, and we genuinely were responsible for like keeping the balance and maintaining the world and being an active part of it. And like the world could super straight up reject you if you weren't doing that. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be like Nyati level strong if you want to like flow against the tide with it. Whereas I think in normal D&D, you're kind of like almost encouraged to do that. You're almost encouraged to flow against the tide a little bit to be the standout hero. And I think that I really enjoyed that. Like, it was, I guess, like kind of amazing, actually, now I think about it, that especially when you consider like African culture, it does genuinely feel like there is a kind of almost like a community in the way that the world of Wigado was run.
Functions,
you know what I mean?
Because I would say that, like, because you could play D&D and play a rogue and have no interest in magic, right? Like, you could play a fighter and just be like, I'm a fighter dude. This is what I do. I'm a soldier, I don't deal in magic. But in Wigado, even if you're a fighter, there's no way you're avoiding magic. Even if you're a rogue, there is no way you're avoiding...
And
I don't mean that... But obviously, like, when I say avoiding magic, I don't just mean, like, somebody's going to throw a fireball at you. What I mean is that, like, internally... For yourself, for your own character development, you aren't going to avoid magic. You aren't going to avoid the spirit realm, because it governs so much of everything in everyday life. And that's how it parallels with African culture, is that like it's in how you prepare food in certain periods of time. It's in how you treat everything. It's in everything, like your burial rituals and stuff, which obviously exist in European cultures, but I don't think it's reflected in the same way in D&D.
And I feel like it's still like a very detached thing as far as like in a lot of like D&D stuff, it's like it's usually like you go somewhere and it's like we have schools of magic or we have or there is no magic allowed here. Do you know what I mean? Like I don't feel like it's intrinsically a part of the world. It's not like the trees grow because of the existence of magic. That's what like Wagadu is like the very like there wouldn't even be life if there was not magic.
Well, you know what I mean? Even you arriving in the world is like magical. You fall like, out of the sky.
You fall out of the sky.
You're a shooting star, basically.
Terminator fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just rise
however,
up.
However, Ongenagama stuck her landing. Muti did not.
Yes. Like, I absolutely stuck my landing.
Yeah.
I feel like Muti landed in the Family Guy fall pose. And Ongenagama landed in a three-point superhero pose.
Yeah. Muti started off in the White Twins and just did a full, like, Peter Griffin down the stairs.
All the way down.
And just hit every single fucking branch on the way down.
And then rolled all the way across the wastes, through the marshes, into the swamp.
Yeah, literally all the way into the swamp. Meanwhile, cut to Ed Yozini. Smoke out of the smoke arises on Ongenagama.
You are queen.
A bunch of lion blood goes. Yeah, a bunch of lion goes. Go. Damn, that's the queen right there. There she is.
There she is. I'm sorry. What now?
Everyone just knelt and immediately.
Yeah.
They all took the knee. Bend the knee.
It was the Lion King. It was fully the beginning of the Lion King.
It was just the Lion King. Yeah. So yeah, what about you, Jeremy? I guess I'd flip that question to you as the DM and see
Definitely from a practical perspective, it was the kind of what you were saying, the degree to which you are, to the degree to which the mindset is different than what you would encounter in a European setting. I think I can say this. I don't think this is much of a spoiler. I recently spoke to none other than the great James Mendes Hodes in preparation for our upcoming season. And one of the things that James pointed out to me was that from a Western European perspective, the relationship between humanity and nature tends to be very adversarial. The idea is we conquer this place. We take, you know, we are the big, strong people.
We tame these winds and these lands.
We tame
sort of
them,
thing.
Yeah,
basically, nature it's all about tamed, conquering that sort of thing, yada, yada, yada. But the key with a lot of these societies is, like, they work with they work with the environment. It's about how well you work with nature. You're not supposed to just run around killing animals, farming them for XP. Instead, what you should, like, you just shouldn't be killing animals, period. Because these animals have spirits who view them as their children. They're like, yo, what are
you
doing
here?
Your
teeth and arms.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Exactly. And like the spirit world, I think that's one of the things that's so drastically different is the presence of the supernatural, as you were saying, is just everywhere. You can't escape it. And the world itself is like, no. Everything is supernatural here. Everything has a super. The rocks have spirits. All of this stuff is connected.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess for Muti, that kind of created, first of all, an interesting obstacle for us as for me as a DM, because now I have to get more creative with my combats. It can't just be like, oh, here's an animal, go kill it, like your typical early D&D adventure. There's giant spiders.
I think I remember actually us having that very conversation, Jeremy, because you were saying like, I can remember you saying like, I feel like I'm going to struggle to level you guys up early on because like normally I just throw some like a big scary lion or something, but that's just not gonna happen in this setting, you know,
because you have to ask permission first, right?
Yeah
And the other thing I think is it created obstacles for your characters because for Ongenagama, I think she kind of took to it a lot more easily, but even so there was like an element of fear.
Yeah, the thing is, I think that might have been a little bit of like cultural influence, like playing a part, actually, because I found is that I found that I really struggled to play a fighter. Like, I really struggled to play the run-of-the-mill, you know what I mean? Not because you want to make run-of-the-mill characters, but, like, I really struggled to be the fighter, right? Like, to just be like, let's go in with the axe, which was, like, the intention of the build in the first place, right? But as the game progressed, like, all of a sudden, I'm negotiating, I'm begging, I'm lying prostrate, and then all of a sudden, the fighter becomes the talker. And then it became natural to go paladin, right? Because like I was just like, I want to hit things with a big gold axe. That's what I want to do. But unfortunately, in this world, you can't just go in swinging. You've got to start making some negotiations, you know? You've got to parlay with people, with entities and people, and you've got to try and negotiate tricky situations. So I think, that's the long and short of that statement. Sorry, I waffled. I'm going to shut up now.
No, that was great.
That was,
apologize. That was awesome. Very insightful.
Never apologize, Yonati. Yeah. We've told you enough. And that's the last time we'll allow it. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Fine. Wait, I'm working on it.
That was a full six of damage, Yonati. Okay, cool, awesome. Full six of psychic damage.
Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing I was going to say was, in contrast to Unati and Onge Nagama, I think perhaps from a cultural perspective, would you say that it's accurate, Jasper, that from a cultural perspective, because of the degree to which the supernatural has been largely removed from European and British life in particular, this was quite an adjustment for you as a player, but also very much for Muti. It seemed like Muti from the get-go, once he started realizing that there were spirits and stuff that had like an influence on the world, it was like, slap money on the table, I'm out, that sort of thing. Like, he was done. Kind of what it seemed like.
Yeah, I think, absolutely. I think that's a really good point, actually, that you made, Yonati, about the fact that, like, I feel like maybe you fit into it as a player, just because I think the sensibilities of the world kind of matched a bit more of your own.
Yeah, at least some of it, at least half of it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that was so much joy for me in playing this setting, and then generally has been doing this show over the last year, is just like being able to go like, oh, okay, what are those sensibilities? How do I contact them? Because that is a part of my life and a part of what makes up me and my, you know, my backstory. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, your Shona tribe. You've got a totem. I'm still gonna figure out what your totem is.
Failure.
I need to chat to your mum and find out what the surnames are and stuff, and then I'll figure out your totem.
Oh, I was thinking of Muti, not Jasper. I'm sorry. I was thinking of Muti. Muti's totem would be failure.
I'm really glad that I didn't hear that in the moment, because, you know, my fragile ego could not have taken that comment.
I thought that was about me. I did not. I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's now been clarified before I actually heard what was said. Otherwise, I might have had to duck out the Zoom for a second.
No, don't worry. I'm not an anti-Jasperite. I'm more of like an anti-Mutite sort of thing.
Fair.
It's not that bad.
Okay, well, rude, because it's still my character. I still take that incredibly personally. Fuck you. But the adjustment level has been that there... I think whenever I've played D&D or contacted fantasy worlds, like whenever you meet adversarial spirits, it's like they're ringwraiths or something like that. They are just like, okay, we have to eliminate this as the issue. This is a problem. These are bad ghost things. These are not good. And there's a we've been brought up on like moral absolutism, right? Like the UK is like the king of like, this is good, this is bad.
We will export it to the rest of the world.
Take our good and bad reasonings, everyone. Buy them off of us. And we'll take your spices and the shit that you have that is really good for a cut price.
And your women and your children.
And your men too, frankly.
Yeah, and your men. I mean, everybody. Your men, like,
everybody, everything. Yeah.
There's a reason that I'm brown and was born in the UK. Do you know what I mean?
Or
that I'm black and was born in the US.
Exactly that. Yeah. And so, but then I think for Muti, I think that was, to be honest, I don't even know if that was me as a player. I think that was just like, we decided that kind of pretty early doors about Muti and his story and the fact that he was literally just chased nightly by spirits, like creatures and things that wanted to harm him. And so his general thing was just like, yeah, I am fully out. And I think that it's funny, I don't know if that will ever go away for Muti, his character. Like, I don't think he'll ever, like, fully trust spirits. I don't think he'll ever, perhaps Onge Nagama, ever fully trust anyone. Just because of that, you know, there was such, that first stint of life was so dark. So I think there was definitely an adjustment, and I think that's where a lot of the kind of, the residual darkness kind of comes from. And I think that... it's only because of the world of Wulgardu that I think I'm allowed to play a character that is that in that morally grey area. Do you know what I mean? Where like he really just can see absolutely no issue with taking or dispatching of a problem or a person or whatever if they are in the way of their happiness or their friend's happiness or safety or whatever it may be. And I think that would probably be, I'd probably say that's one of the bigger elements that bigger learning curve is that moral kind of fluidity, which I talked about a lot actually in the like in the Oath and the Trial like PDF that's already been released, and I guess we'll go into more when the sort of the larger sort of book comes out, which is, you know, that the fact that in Wulgardu there isn't this black and white, you know, nature to things, and so therefore you do have to really consider I think you can just enjoy being a bit more autonomous in the world. Do you know what I mean? I feel like you don't have to fall into, like, it's actually really made me want to play a paladin. I was actually thinking about that for like the longest time, being like, I wonder what it's like playing, you know, your stereotypical paladin in a world like Wulgardu, because I don't think
you
that
wouldn't
that's what I mean. You just wouldn't. You couldn't really, like, well, no, but it would be, I absolutely believe in what my god stands for, and my god is morally gray as fuck. Do you know what I mean? So therefore, you know what I mean? Like, you are a, you know, you would have to, you might still believe as staunchly as a regular paladin, but you would, the confines would be completely different.
Like, you'd still be as principled, but yeah, it would be just, the principles themselves would be just very...
Vastly different.
What I wanted to ask as well, so that was the first thing that jumped out at us. What was one of your, first pick your favorite, do we want to go show specifically, or do we want to go Wulgardu setting specifically with this next question?
I think I feel like we should go for Wulgardu setting specifically, just because I think we do a lot of this on the Wulgardu Watch, which you can go and check out on our Patreon.
We do
a lot of this in our
deep dives.
We did an extra long Wulgardu Watch for the last two episodes that we did, and that was like nearly 2 hours long or something crazy. It was like an hour and a half. I think we can go more like setting specific, just because I think I also want to give people an idea of what life could be like for them in Wulgardu as opposed to just in the Cub and the Caterpillar.
Yeah. Okay, so the next thing that I was going to ask then is, among the sweeping changes that are made to your typical D&D setting with Wulgardu, are the lineages one of the biggest, definitely one of the most notable changes, is that everyone is human, but you now have different lineages. And not only that, but you can swap lineages if you really want to. It's possible to do that as well. My question to you is, and we may already have the answer to this, but what is your favorite lineage of the ones that you've looked at, and why? If it is just your character's lineage, pick your second favorite and then say why.
Iron Masters.
Cheap.
So the other people that you also live with.
Yes.
I mean, the thing is that, like, for me, it just really speaks of a history that absolutely was, that isn't necessarily discussed in the global consciousness of what world history is, right? When we think about world history, we think about Eurocentric history, and that these are the people that discovered the gold and the resources and made the most of it. We don't think about Mansa Musa. We don't think about these great wealthy leaders. And we don't think about the fact that, like, you know, in, you know,
and also like tactical geniuses and, do you know what I mean? Like, like genuine, like great
Zulu,
minds,
like,
you know what I mean?
Incredible minds. And, and like, cause like when I kind of like, you know, sort of do my research, cause I'm like obviously trying to rediscover my, like my own culture, and I'm currently deferred by a year, my third degree. Like it's, what kind of fascinates me about that is that, you know, if I think about Southern Africans, the gold was always there. We just didn't give a crap about it, right? Like, the gold was beneath our feet. Like, and this is what you consider to be wealth. And obviously that was used as wealth, you know, further north in Africa, but Southern African tribes and Nguni tribes traveled down from those peoples as nomads. But like, if you think about like the kind of like, I'll call them for lack of a better term, like the golden eras of, you know, like, you know, Ghana, and now currently called Ghana, Nigeria, all of those places, like, I find that incredibly fascinating, and the technology and the infrastructure, everything that must have been destroyed and laid to waste in the name of kind of like propagating a colonialist agenda. You know, it's to me, it's tantamount, the same reaction that many people and I get for the burning of the libraries of Alexandra. It's like, it's this that's the same reaction I have thinking about all that we've lost due to a process of colonization. And that's what I love about the Iron Masters. is that, like, come on, dude. Like, you think we didn't know it was what? Like, how do you, like, really, like, you want to start that history from your own point? You know, history is always written from the perspective of the victor. Like, and the more I do research and the more I learn about other people's kingdoms, even how we think about sexuality and gender, it's just way more progressive and way more fascinating. And it's interesting how we've come full circle. And now it's Western societies that have taken on these sensibilities. So now they are becoming right or liberal or the right way to go. And it's just interesting that they've always been, whether it's Native American or African or ancient, you know, sort of Asian cultures as well. So yeah, that's my point in it.
On that note, I remember while doing research for, I think just like on the continent of Africa in general, I remember seeing, I think it was in West Africa, there were a group of people who like straight up skipped the Bronze Age. Like they figured out their own method of like metalworking and forging and just skipped straight to the Iron Age, which is like, you don't hear about that.
Exactly. You don't hear about that. Oh, if you look at it like Zimbabwe, like those old, like, I can't remember what the place is called for the life of me. Please don't come for me. But it's these old, beautiful, this infrastructure, and it's this gorgeous stone, solid stone, central circles, like infrastructure that Western civilizations are like, no one could have built that. I don't know why we don't. So sometimes I have this block in my head, but also Egypt. Egypt's in Africa, like the pyramids.
This is totally a European thing, though. This is absolutely a European thing where Europe was so fascinated by Egypt for such a long time that we've almost like, it almost feels like it's been absorbed into Eurocentric culture.
We're
just like told from a very white perspective. Do you know what I mean? But it feels like very reported on, right? It feels like very like cliche almost to talk about Egyptian culture, even though it is by far one of the dopest cultures
ever.
Yeah. Like, it's insanely cool. Like, Egypt is the best.
And when I've kind of been doing studies around like African religions and African belief systems, some of the sort of people that I listen to and read, I was like, yeah, you've got to take that route from like Ra, that's part of your god as well. Remember, this is Africa, babe. Like, and we like we traveled downwards, like Southern African peoples. If you want to look at like the Xhosas, the Zulus, the Pedis, the Tswanas, the Sotus, like and other groups, Zivendas, etc. Like, we came down into that nation. The Khoisan were living there first, my dude. We're like, you know what I mean? Like, it was a massive continent. So I think that there's just something so exciting about the Iron Masters in that, like, we're artificers too, damn it.
Yeah. That was such a good answer. Fuck. Why couldn't you have gone second? That was such a good answer. And I'm like,
I've just been studying.
I kind of think these are so cool because I like their mechanics.
I
was genuinely going to pick a Khakis, but then I was like, no, I can't say fish people.
No, you really, really can. Like, if you look at like Somali,
I will say, legit.
Don't
my
shut
favorites.
Up. Continue talking.
Yeah. No, please.
Roll another damage die, Jasper.
Oh, that's a 3. That's 9 points of damage for you, Natty.
Fine. 9 points of damage.
21 more points, and then that's it. You can't shut up.
Like, I mean, if you look at, like, you know, Somali peoples, they're like, they're a massive, am I correct? Someone's going to come for me, but I think I'm correct. They're a massive fishing community, right? And that's been intrinsically part of their culture for so many years. And if you look at what we're doing environmentally, and this is, you know, a global problem, but largely propagated by the West and China. But if you look at, like, environmental issues and the overfishing of the oceans, like, those societies are dying. And then you wonder why we've got pirates now in Somalia. So, yes, the Akaki are very important and representative of something that we need to remember about being connected to the earth. The nature is not to be conquered. It is to be embraced. Anyway, continue.
This actually leads me perfectly onto my favorite is the Daima. I just think they're fucking cool for a myriad of reasons. Also, as everyone now knows, I'm a big fan of death and necromancy, so I'll keep that theme going. Why not?
Our
I also want to say, for all those Jasper stans out there that are vehemently defending me, I really hear you. I appreciate you and I love you. For all the people that have defended my hot necromancy takes.
Those people seem to think that in the episode you proposed I think the necromancer could work. And me and Nonati were like, no, be quiet. No. And we're just beating you down the whole time. What actually happened was you proposed
you heard two fans. That's how it went.
And then as we started reading the features, you were like, oh no.
Oh no.
I think people were speaking to the broader points I was making about the potential for a necromancer class.
Anyway, you say broader points.
Anyway. Well, Jeremy, I've got stands now that are going to come for you. So all power to you, man.
That's true. There have been no Jeremy stands that have come forward. So it could be that
Yanati's had stands from day one. I've just got my stands now. You've definitely got yours. Yours are the quiet intellectual stance. That's the thing.
Yeah, they
like,
love you.
They're the ones like Jeremy does not need defending. It will offend his honor if we defend him.
Yeah, exactly.
We should stay over here and stay
Jeremy
quiet
can
and
watch him
defeat them gloriously.
They're like Saiyans. Being like, no, we must honor him and give him the opportunity to fight for himself.
Yeah, give him the opportunity to die in combat.
It's like me, like, Jasper stands.
Get him making me away. Into the forever DM of TBH. No, help me.
They're like, this is an honorable death.
This is an honorable death. No, but leading on from your connection, though, I was going to say second.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HeadGum at checkout to save.
HeadGum. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Was the Ace Man. Just because my first character that I ever played was a Genasi, and that's like the equivalent version. And then if you read through the Ace Man's like descriptions of all the different, the different sort of elemental like traits and stuff, they go into so much detail just about like how important like their connection to like that element is. Like even like there's way more description on these subclasses than there is in like any of the other subclasses, just in describing how you interact with the earth or how what the air means to you. And like the Laka, who are the earth Aesimans, like they're just they're just some dope sand dune riding, like it's a very cool image. And then I think also just there's just like so much there's so much there to like unpick, and so much there that can inform your character. And I'm always just a big fan of like anything where I can draw little like, oh, I really like that little bit to inform my character. I love it. It's great. It's very cool.
Yeah.
Very What's your cool. favorite, Jeremy, actually? I'd be interested to know this because you haven't played one. Not yet.
It's true, not yet. The Azimon are very cool. I also do like the Daima a lot. I guess One that jumps out at me probably is the Emere. I do enjoy the Emere because I have spoken on the show before about my general distaste for elves. But I was
Jeremy really does hate elves. I don't think I've ever actually met a nice elf in any of Jeremy's campaigns. Even when he's told me about stuff, I'm like, they are not nice elves. Like, no, there's no- Jeremy is like
think
super-
of the one that Unati plays in. I never have, if I ever have like a really stereotypical elf, they're usually not very likable.
Like super arrogant. Yeah. They're like, I actually live in a 4,000 year old tree.
Look at my skin glistening.
How many of your grandparents do you know? I know all of mine. None of them have ever died.
They're all the eternal undying lands where I will go as well, when we hobnob for the rest of life.
I'm chosen by the deities. You won't. I do enjoy the Emere because they are a much less obnoxious, cool elf people who live in the woods and have like they still have all that same elegance. They have some really cool abilities as well, just like in general.
That's something I should point out about the Ace Man as well. Like, they fully fix Genasis in this. Like, they make them genuinely really much more fun and like mechanically viable, because I feel like they did in core D&D they do not go far enough with the Genasi abilities. You get some real minor stuff, like it's like you get like resistance to that element's damage, and then like usually it affects the way if you can breathe or something, like it's kind of it, like it's really once per day 10 feet off the ground.
I have to say it just because I am Zulu and Xhosa clan, and I have to speak for my Nguni people. The Izingonyama, I mean, Lion Bloods. The name is even freaking Nguni, like Izingonyama, like. Oh, it fills me with such like tribal joy inside just to know that we're fighters, because we are. Mm. And that just reminds me of like Shaka and his people, not to like go into the whole kind of martial people trope that we've touched on before with James Mendes Hodas. But like, there is something like regal and powerful. My favorite Shaka Zulu quote, a colonizer came up to him and said, oh Lord, what did you say? If you do not turn from your ways and follow our God, you will burn in the fires of hell. And he said, "Here we eat fire." So
that's my Nguanyama all the way.
Wow,
that's very cool. We eat fire. Damn, that's metal. Like, that's
Jeremy,
truly metal.
That's hardcore, like, right?
That's very hardcore.
And, okay, he did kind of go nuts and become a crazy despot, but like, you know. That aside, cool guy.
let's just gloss over that part.
Conscripting everyone in his area, like making like killing anybody who would drink milk from a cow after his mother died.
Look, guys, you're never going to find a morally unambiguous warlord. That's just how it goes. I don't care what culture we're talking about. It just doesn't happen. War is not morally unambiguous.
Yeah.
I would like to throw in actually a quick little segue, if I may, just because actually I've just been thinking then about what you said about kind of having that cultural difference. And I think there is probably a few people, and I think that had it not been for the show, I might have even been in this category of like people that are slightly trepidatious about the idea of diving into something that is like so culturally specific and outside of their realm. And I'm sort of saying that the reason I'm phrasing that question that way is I'm not just talking about white people here. Do you know what I mean? I'm talking about people who, you know, even like me or you, Jeremy, who just might not have been grown up with as much of this. Yeah. Like, we're not from Africa and I think that like the joy of this world is the fact that like it does so much to give you the tools and kind of let you know in a very kind of fun, dramatic, narratively satisfying way when you as a player are butting up against the world as opposed to like your character or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that it very quickly becomes both satisfying and enjoyable to like learn the rules, to learn the way the world works. So I think as long as you're going into playing Wagadu, if you are wanting to try it out, and again, you're having that slight trepidation of like, oh, this is like a very different kind of game for me, it's just like, as long as you're going in as a player with like a, I want to learn, I want to experience, I want to absorb as much of this as possible, then I think you're going to have like a fantastic time. And not only that, like, it's just, I really can't say how unique of an experience this is. I genuinely had like chills after the first like ever session we did, just because it just felt like
so wild. Oh,
everyone here is black, and everyone here is got this, like, you know, this connection and this feeling and this sensation, and it just, it really is quite a liberating thing, I think.
Yeah.
And I think I probably have the similar thing even if I did something like a Wagadu set in like an Asian country, or you know, do you know what I mean, or drew an Asian culture, or you know, or Southern American culture, or do you know what I mean. I feel like I'd have a very similar experience, just because it's quite enjoyable to kind of have that almost like out of body true experience of a world. And it, even as I'm thinking of it now, like, it's almost like, I almost feel like it's a way that I genuinely feel like we could help break down barriers, like, in the world. Like, I feel like if you got to touch stone with a culture in this kind of interactive way, I feel like it would make you so much more appreciative of it than just like, even if you had like the best teacher in the world
or textbook, who was from
you know, expert, whatever, who was from the area and told it in a really engaging way, something about actually being in the world and really engaging with it is amazing. Yeah. So I really, really want to encourage anyone who is, like, even if you're like one of these people who's like, who considers themselves an ally and just like, and wants to be more like learned, but maybe you're like me and you fucking hate research, and research, you find it really hard, you never know where to start, and you get super overwhelmed. Genuinely, something like Wagadu, I think, would be super dope.
Yeah,
try it. Do you know what I mean? Like, get some friends together and try running a run around in Wagadu.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, you're going to have, like, it's going to be such a enriching experience.
Yeah. And I mean, and on that point, I guess, like, while you were speaking, like, this kind of just occurred to me, because, like, if you consider it, like, the one touchstone of look, I'm not an anthropologist, but the one touchstone, I'm trying to study, but the one touchstone of, like, general human societies is the act of storytelling. And and a lot of storytelling, I remember, like me and my grandmother used to bond just telling stories, like that whole tradition of sitting around telling stories, or being out in the bush and being around a fireplace while you're camping and listening to a story. And the great thing about D&D is, okay, cool, you have the orator, who's telling you the story, but now all of a sudden, and TTRPGs in general, now all of a sudden you are part of that experience with the orator. And I think it's just like this beautiful new form of storytelling where you get to learn so much. People learn better through stories, not lectures. And when you can emotionally connect, that's when you really absorb, right? When you can sympathize, when you can empathize, when you butt up against things, you really absorb that, because there's a part of you that experiences that from the inside out. Like you keep pointing out, Jasper, there's the part of your brain that holds memory and imagination can't tell the difference, right? If you keep informing that into yourself, you're only going to be enriching and flexing your cultural intelligence, right? Your CQ, and your core and your flex will just keep developing, and maybe we will stop with this fuckery.
CQ, we're using that now. That's officially a term intelligence, of
throwback
halflings.
It is, CQ,
man. I love CQ. That's really cool.
I was gonna say, I forgot what I was going to say. Please continue. I had a whole thing that I was listening to you, and I was gonna respond to what you were saying and be like, yeah. And then, oh, you know what it was? It was, I was gonna throw out there. I also think that the Wagadu setting, even though it's created with D&D 5th edition in mind, could very easily translate to a more RP-based system. I mean, if we're talking about collaborative storytelling without a specific storyteller role, a GM-less setting could also be very interesting. A GM-less system, that is.
That'd be sick.
Could be very interesting. Say you combined like elements of Wanderhome, which is GM, well, potentially GM-less, with Wagadu. You would probably like change all the animals, or you could just straight up use people. It could be this. It could have the same kind of tone. Like, it could easily work in that sort of with that sort of a system.
And I think that's that I guess we should probably get onto this, because we've done a lot about sort of us as players, our kind of reaction and instincts and about playing it, but I guess, like, also just like there's a big adjustment, right, as a DM, like, we, you know, in terms of just like the nature of what you throw at us and how we kind of go about, think, you know, all of the any kind of moral adaptation we've got to do. You as a DM, you've got to do that like 10 times over, and you've got to actually like find a way in a very, very morally gray world to present us with like a genuine threat and bad guy. And do you know what I mean? It made it all the more satisfying. I think we all, you know, we've spoken on this show countless times about like all the best villains are the ones that you can empathize with, and you can kind of like, well, they did have a point somewhere in there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm. Even if it's lost now. So I guess like I'll throw a question out to you, Jeremy. Like what was the transition? When did you realize there was a transition? I think first of all, like, was it like after the first couple episodes? Was it when you sat down with the material in the first place of like, oh, okay, this isn't going to run like a traditional 5e kind of campaign setting?
I think it was something that I realized like when I first read it, but it became much more blatant in episode 2, because that was when I actually had to, that was the first time that I had to enforce specific parts of the setting that like were drastically different. And specifically in terms of the Siraj incident, for those of you who don't listen to The Cub and the Caterpillar, disappointed.
For those of you who couldn't bear the technical issues with the first few episodes of Cub and Caterpillar, in you I am not disappointed. You're fine. You're off the hook.
Yeah, it's fair. Yeah, if that's what you're reacting to, I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah. From episode 10 onwards, I think it gets better. I can't remember exactly when it gets better, but it does get better.
Well, when did Lou show up? Because after Lou was when we started doing.
I think that was like episode 10. I'm sure. Something
I thought
like
it was 10. 7.
Oh, it was really that early?
Yeah, wow. I think it was episode 8 or 9 was the first time that
me took up all of my brain space. I just assumed we would live streamed forever because that was what it felt like.
Up until the last two episodes of the show, everything was live streamed. But that for those of you who haven't listened to it, basically what happened was the party were hungry and they were like, okay, we want to go hunt some stuff. And they caught a bunch of fish, and then a fish spirit showed up named Siraj was basically like, hey, yo, why are you basically he showed up, it's like, oh, why is this happening right now?
I had a fish in my mouth when it turned up. I was like,
this is one genuine point of clarification that I would like to make publicly. I made this on the Mugadu Watch, but I will make this again publicly.
Yes.
Mooty did not eat a fish.
Mooty
did not even hunt the fish. And on top of that, Mooty only ever did what he did because he was mortally terrified of fighting Onganagama, the fighter who was stood within 5 feet of him at the time when Siraj said, fight. She would have cut him in half with a a single hit.
It was also kind of friggin' my fault. I suggested
barbarian a fighter. I was like, no, this is not going to work out for me.
Yeah, so basically this fish shows up and is like, he's like a 7 foot tall fish, is like, look, this is unacceptable. They're like, what? I think Onigenigama's like, oh. Because I think I had to roll history to realize. And you're like, oh.
She knew.
Oh my snap. Bad.
And then Mooty, he's basically like, well, I mean, there's going to need to be like retribution one way or another. Like, we got to even this out. And they were like, well, no, we don't want to have to. He's like, look, okay, how about this? I think his original plan was going to be something else. But he was going to have you guys fight each other, not to the death, but just so that you could know the fear that these fish experienced, the fear and pain that his children experienced. Mm-hmm. You know what it was? You also tried to lie about it, too, because the Mooty tried to lie about it and the fish showed up. He brought the fish spirits back, like in ghost form, and they're like, eh. They did it. He was like, well, you guys are gonna have to fight each other. And then that was when Mooty decided, and by this point a bunch of fish had showed up to watch what was happening. They're all like, oh, they gonna get it now. And Mooty decided to fireball this spirit, thinking like, hey, like, because he's more terrified of Onganagama than he is at the 7 foot fish.
I'd fought and battled spirits already and hadn't, you know, and managed to get the better of them. Onganagama had a huge lion-headed axe and muscles bigger than Mooty's entire body.
Yes. As it turns out, the wrong decision.
It turned into a fight
because that also resulted in the deaths of many, many, many more fish. Turned into a full-on fight. Mooty got literally smacked down they were calling him the Cobra Koi, which is a great name.
Oh, yeah. He fully did, like, 50 points of damage in like a single hit or something, and I was at level four.
He like he also grew arms. He grew arms with little fins at the end. And then like started beating Muti up, like went Super Saiyan, smacked him into the water. Muti was then cursed.
I died.
Oh, you know what it was? Before that happened, because he was going to do something else originally, but then Ongenigama begged with a natural 20 persuasion. Begged.
What was actually going to happen again? I can't remember.
I think it was going to be something like he was going to force you to be a fish that was being eaten by a person or something like that. I don't know if I ever told you that, but he never got a chance to explain. But that was what I was thinking of.
Well,
but then it was
the
like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
So then Siraj was like, okay, well, Ongenigama, you have showed me honor, and so I will give you gills. And then for Muti, it's no teeth for you, no arms for you. You just have fins now. And it was a horrible curse that Muti struggled with for like a sizable portion of the season.
Can I ask? This is definitely a Wagadu Watch question. But when I fight Siraj in season three. Will I at least get a save against him taking my arms and teeth away? Like, if I'm a higher level, will I at least get a save? Or is it like one of those abilities where if it's the first time you don't get a save, maybe the second time you get a save? I'm just pre-planning my big fight with Siraj.
For the eventual thing, yeah, I would probably allow for a save.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Just because, like, I will obviously make a mental note not to fight him if he just has the ability to take away limbs willing at will.
I think it's sort of like a spirit supernatural being higher than you can just do stuff beyond your comprehension, and you are trying to like it was
that's what I'm saying like if that, I'm matching him like closer to his level or his power level, it would be harder for him to just influence me in that way.
If you're able to actually like win a fight against him, then it would be like first of all you'd be a higher level. Second of all, like it would be,
cool.
That fight, I think that fight was a pivotal moment on a number of levels.
It absolutely showed me exactly where the fuck I was at.
Yeah,
it changed everybody's. It changed my thought process. It changed, I think, both of your guys' approaches as players.
I mean, I couldn't cast spells as a sorcerer with an 11 AC and a -1 to strength. Fundamentally, that changed. Yeah. Pretty much everything for many, many episodes.
It was pivotal. And then it also led to the introduction of my boy Bakoe. I feel like every time Muti sees Bakoe, there's just like this, hello, Bakoe, sort of thing, like, you know, gritted. Well, when he finally has teeth.
I was going to say, the first time it was like, hello, Bakoe.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, anyway, I would say that was the moment where I was like, oh, this is really different. And then I think, especially for me as a DM, because I was trying to figure out the world as we were going, I was like, well, one of the coolest things about this world seems to be the exploration. Like, clearly just in the book, you're talking about the locations, the way that the land changes from cycle to cycle, and all this, like, everything is constantly like in motion. Everything's evolving. And so I was like, well, we want to go out there and see as much of this place as possible. But it's like along the way, we need some cool little incidents. And I think I even said on Wagadu Watch, this is a little taste of what you would get, that King Nyati was not originally meant to be like a big bad sort of guy. If you want to, I guess you can come back and do something with this guy. But I had not anticipated how strong he would affect both of you.
He really did. He really did. He got
became
he got
all
go
about
big time. So good. And I think that's actually something I was thinking about. One thing I think this excites me about the idea of us going into this sort of seasons format, just for the show, It's just also, I think it gives us the ability to be like, okay, what did we really like about season one? Do you know what I mean? What are the elements and stuff that we really like? And for me, the exploration was absolutely like top of the fucking list. I loved it. And like in my head now, I'm like, okay, season two, Mooty needs some sort of sand surfer type thing so we can get around and see these incredible places. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Like, because I just want to see this stuff now. Like, I want to be, you know, going to the top of the White Twins, even in an Africa-based setting, suddenly snow became magical again.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, this is like Super cool now. This is, it felt like going to a desert in a normal D&D campaign. It was like the exact opposite of what you like, normally when you go to a desert, you're like, oh my god, we've got elements to battle and it's just so different and what is this? You know what I mean? It was exactly the same but with snow.
Yeah,
and like what I think, like also with that sort of season format and how the game kind of works, it's quite nice to now, because I think for a lot of that, I was really playing that reactively. I was just like, okay, thing happens, okay, react. Thing happens, okay, react. And now to have a bit of a pause to, as a player and slash actor, kind of go, okay, here's all the information. Here are the given circumstances. This is how you've acted. Right. Like, where is this person gonna go? Like if there's scales, like if you're chilling with Anubis and there's like scales for like good and evil, like what's weighing, like what's happening, and then pick a side, like roll a d20 and pick a side and go, okay, cool, I'm gonna play like this now and then see what happens. I'm gonna go for this side.
That was one of my favorite phrases I think United's ever come out with. What? Just if you mess around with scales, if you're chilling with Anubis, just on a Friday,
as you do,
you and Anubis, just there with some scales. You know, Foth weighing
is doing
stuff
a keg stand.
You know, just you know, he's over there with his souls. Yeah. I'm over here counting some coins on my scales,
ripping bong hits.
Anubis is like, hey bro, can I get a hit?
The feather is somehow turned into like a little bong. But yeah, I think that's one element of especially one very interesting thing for those of you who are fans of WCAGDU but who are not on the WCAGDU Discord. You should definitely join the WCAGDU Discord, because they actually have an ongoing game on there. It's not D&D, but it's like the group, you can basically choose a lineage, join your people, and then your people will make large scale decisions based on how the world is presenting challenges to you. And it's very, like, I think Alan basically GMs it. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, I think it's a weekly thing where people, the groups will, different lineages will have to make decisions and stuff. But that sort of thing, I think, is something that we try to bring in more in future, like the, because we definitely, there was a lot of exploration, but I also like the idea of being able to have not constant peril, more like misadventures. Maybe like here, okay, peril here, but like serenity now, you know, that sort of thing. Like you just go around a different,
And I think we're coming at a lot of this from the perspective of like trying to make a show as well. Like, am I trying to make it entertaining?
That's
and
the other thing.
I think it's very different to like when you're running a home game. And I would genuinely love like if you've run WCAGDU and you've played in it, like I would love to know like how it's gone for you. And like, you know, please jump into the Discord and like let us know how it's going.
Let's
think that it's like, it's just a very different experience, obviously, that we're having trying to sort of do this and make it something fun for you guys to like actually listen to and kind of like feel like you can interact with and things like that. And I guess maybe we should, for just like, you know, some sort of I guess like closing thoughts or like, you know, to wrap up just yet, but it'd be good, I think, just talk about what maybe what we're excited about, like what's coming up, because I feel like we are very blessed. We get to talk to Alan, the creator, and he gives us little tidbits and stuff, and he's helping Jeremy with the kind of what is to come next, and we're trying to include as much as we can, obviously, because things that we do in our game will impact the game that they're making in a small way. And you know, I'm hoping that maybe Mooty's spell might appear in the game. That's gonna honestly be like one of the coolest moments of my life if that happens. Like that. So I guess what's like the thing that you want to like because obviously, you know, it's still such a new thing, and you know, it doesn't have like the rich homebrew, vast homebrew world that like D&D has, like, oh, core D&D has. So like, what would be the things that excite you? What's like the thing that excites you next? What are the kind of things that you hope are in season two? Obviously, Jeremy, you have a bit more control over that than we do, but like, I'm interested just to know, like, you know, what you'd like a bit more of, what you really like, and do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to go home.
Yeah, Edgozini, man, it's going to be, I already know that it's going to be some mind-blowing narrative from Jeremy.
I want to go home, because like, even if you just look at like the sort of Google kind of stock images of Edgozini, like Ngwavuma is actually, Edgozini is the dam that was built during the apartheid era, but like Ngwavuma is the actual place. Even those mountains are just absolutely majestic. I just want to go home.
No, yeah. No, of course.
Jasper, yeah, why don't you answer first, and then I'll jump in.
Yeah. That makes sense. We'll end on you. I think for me, I'm very interested by. This is like my first proper spellcaster that I've ever played, and I feel like I couldn't have picked a better setting to do it in. And I am very, very fascinated with just plowing into. I want like more items. I'd love to like have more like some more like kind of Wagadu specific items. Like I love Mpepu and Iboga. Like those are two of my favorite things to have come out of them, just because I feel like, especially towards the end, we were starting to think of some really unique ways of using those things. And like, you know, the Iboga is like a spell component now for me and for Mooty's Moonslither and stuff like that. So big fan of the idea of getting more like magic items and just generally kind of seeing if there's ways that we can, you know, craft like spells and stuff. Like if there's ways that we can craft spells, or if there will be spells included that feel more like intrinsically about Wagadu, you know, maybe it's like more spirit related spells. Like obviously, you know, in a lot of like core D&D, it's like, oh, this affects fiends and celestials and etc. And I feel like you could easily create spells like for spirits and for, you know, ancestors and, you know, whether it be about contacting them, drawing on their power, you know, all that kind of stuff. I just could not be more excited for, especially like, you know, the official Wagadu stuff and then stuff hopefully that like we'll make for the show. Because I know whatever Jeremy makes will be very cool. So.
Thank you.
What about you, Jeremy? Yeah, what are you excited for?
I appreciate the faith that you have in me. I'm excited to get to. I'm excited really about everything. Getting to collaborate more with Alan and work like start working more things that they're planning, as well as more things that we create. Definitely like more items and that sort of thing. Maybe even Wagadu specific subclasses or that sort of thing.
Yes,
a new lineage or two. That could also be interesting.
The only problem is there, Jeremy, if we make a Wagadu-specific sorcerer subclass, like, I'm going to have to switch, and you're going to have to let that happen, because it would be really mean of you to not let Mooty be that, because we made it together, so I'm just giving you the heads up that you've got to let me do that.
Like, I'll let you know if I ever make a sorcerer-specific subclass, or sorcerer subclass that's Wagadu-specific.
Sorry, let me rephrase. You can't come back on 3BH until you've made a sorcerer-specific subclass for Wagadu, at which point I will play that one for season two. Is that clear?
I'm glad we've settled that, but we've
clarified that. Okay,
I think getting more into like exploring the difference, like the morality of the setting and how it can be kind of like, it can be like you end up, I think things for this season were most, well, I'm not going to say they're cut and dried, because I think there were a lot of cases where it's like people that you like had beliefs that you were like, I don't like this. That sort of thing.
Farsong's a great example of that, I feel like.
Yes!
I've had a very visceral, towards the end of the campaign was like, okay.
Yeah, it was like a moral. It was like a moral pretzel, and the pretzels were making you thirsty by that point.
It's like when a good friend comes up with a real hot take about politics or something, and you're like, ooh.
Yes, or like necromancy.
I saw a thing on the Discord earlier. I saw this like conversation that was happening. It was like a screenshot, like in there. They put it in the meme section, basically describing necromancy as just the next evolution of recycling.
Yes, that was great. That was a great meme.
They were like, They were just like, hey, look, it's not doing anything right now, so we can, you know.
Shout out to Tempest
that
6.
That really got me.
Shout out to Tempest
really
6 for dropping
yeah,
that
Tempest
meme.
Yeah, Tempest 6, thank you so much. That, that really got me. That really got me.
That was great.
Also, I realized what kind of worms I had opened in that last episode. Because yeah, like, I don't think I've had more reaction about anything I've ever said on this show. And I feel like I've made some really salient points about diversity and inclusion, and none of that has broken through. But me saying...
People nod silently.
Maybe necromancy has a bad rap. Suddenly gets
it's
me.
Almost, it's like the, it's the I sleep meme, and then it's like the like all yeah, makes Jasper makes Sally a point about diversity and inclusion. I sleep. Jasper advocates for necromancy as a positive force for society.
I'm now gonna make it all like all necromancy. I'm gonna have to do like an all necromancy one shot or something, or like or you guys are gonna have to play necromancy hunters or something.
Yeah. But I wasn't done. I was not done.
You were not done. Sorry, I interrupted you.
I'm also I'm also interested in including, as I'd said, like more positive or just like interesting interactions with NPCs that are not as combat focused. Don't worry, this is not going to become like a show about nothing. Like there's still going to be conflict and stuff, but it's I would want to include just from time to time, you know, an episode that's maybe a little bit lower stakes and more just like we're experiencing new people and learning about things. Because I think that function of D&D is again very Eurocentric. It's a very Eurocentric idea of like this is about fighting. It's also harkens back to D&D's roots as a war game. When it first started, it was very much like going on quests, conquering things, and bringing back loot. Colonizer, like a very colonialist sort of game.
Yeah, aren't there some roots in like Warhammer as well? Like some crossovers?
I think it predates Warhammer, but I could be wrong about that. But yeah,
but I think Warhammer, I think probably, it probably is like the Warhammer probably came out of it. Do you know what I mean? It's a very natural evolution of what that is. Do you know what I mean?
Okay, cool.
Taking it to its nth degree. Do you know what I mean?
Cool.
And then I cannot wait until the eventual combat between Muti and Siraj. I think it's going to be epic. That feels like
an upcoming, like that's gonna have to be like a one shot.
I feel like we're gonna be asking for a marine biologist for Muti to just help to like figure out does this fit? Is anyone here a marine biologist? Trying to figure out how to stop this.
It's gonna become the game bowl of the Cup of the Caterpillar. Like it's gonna fully, everyone's just waiting
fish
for bowl. The day that they are
they call
back
it
in
fish
the
bowl.
Fish bowl.
Fishbowl!
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Man, that is
I'm
funny.
Enjoying that a lot.
Yeah.
Fishbowl or Muti Bowl, I feel like, sounds pretty
fun.
Yeah,
Muti Bowl would also be good.
That's very fun. There's so much like exciting stuff. And I think that this won't be the last Mugadu sort of deep dive we do, because I think we've gone into some lot of broad stuff, and I feel like it'd be cool for us to get into the mechanics side of things as well. So let us know if that's something that you would like us to do. We definitely
and
be up for doing that
episode.
There's
going to be more material released as well. Is
yes.
The other thing. They're going to be
releasing
more material.
I think once that comes out, I think we will absolutely have to do a couple episodes probably digging into that stuff.
We'll
get Alan back on and maybe even see if we can get some other people from the team on to come and talk about the creation of that. I personally cannot wait for that stuff to come out. I think it's going to be amazing, and we're going to use them all for season 2, which is going to be very exciting. I think that's probably like a good natural place for us to end. We've kind of come a bit full circle, which is exciting.
I have a quick question before we close
out. Do.
How many Seinfeld references did I make?
You made...
At least 5, 6. I'm just guessing.
You made exactly 3 Seinfeld references.
I made 10.
Oh, sweet Lord.
It's a really clever show.
Seinfeld references.
Yeah,
it's
well...
a great show, folks.
It's
and
good.
Some of them,
it's good.
Some of them, Jasper was so taken in by, he joined in. Anyone who can catch all 10 Seinfeld references, there needs to be a prize.
Jeremy, if someone gets them all, Jeremy, I will sit down and do a bonus episode with you only about Seinfeld. If someone can get all 10,
yes.
I will sit down and watch, like, I don't know, the pilot episode or whatever, and let Jeremy...
I wouldn't have you watch the pilot, I'd have you watch later
stuff. You can pick the episode, and we'll sit down and we'll do a full Jasper Reacts to Seinfeld episode on the Patreon.
Yeah.
We will have one viewer, the one person that got all 10 references.
But anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in, this was fun.
Yeah, this was very, very fun. And like, yeah, really, really, really excited to share with you what's coming next. But please, like, keep this conversation going. And whilst we're on the topic of future things that you'd like us to discuss, as always, hit us up on social media at TB Halflings, on our Discord channel. You can also email us at secondbreakfast@tbhalflings. If you want us to cover any topics, if you've got any ideas for things that we should talk about, games we should play, we are definitely currently in the process of thinking about other TTRPGs that we're going to branch out into, and things like that. So really, really, really open to some, United's given some stern and vicious looking eyes. Yep, that's Call of Cthulhu. There it is. Oh, sweet Lord. Mm-hmm. It's coming. It is coming. I can't decide whether I want to do it just like as soon as possible, or whether I want you to do the scariest fucking Halloween episode that I'm not going to be able to sleep afterwards.
I think I want to do a scary Halloween episode.
I'm going to go out and say this right now. In my ideal world, what would happen is we actually get together and this like one of the next things we do, like all together, all three of us in a room, candles lit, we'll film the whole thing.
Yeah,
like just to see, because I know I'll be shit scared, but I want to see if Jeremy actually gets scared at any point. I want to see, because Jeremy's a hardcore like horror nerd, so I feel like I'd love it to see if we can create an environment that's scary enough for even Jeremy. Anyway, we have been rambling for a long, long time. Thank you so much for listening to us ramble. I hope that you have enjoyed season one of The Cub and the Caterpillar. We've got some sexy little one-shots coming up, and then we will have our second adventure, which I guess, I don't know if we mentioned, it'll be a setting of our own creation. I don't know if
I think we did say that. We're creating
We did say that explicitly. Okay.
Yeah. It was a setting of our own creation. Still something, hopefully, that you have not seen before. Yes.
Yeah. Hells yes.
Yes.
And on that note, thank you as always so much for listening. We will be back next week with another episode, but for now, so long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.